Good morning. So you may be familiar with Canada from our fine cuisine, like beer and donuts and poutine. Poutine, for those of you guys who don't know, is cheese curd and gravy and french fries. It's one of my favorite foods. And it's no wonder that we need socialized medicine with food like that. But you may not be as familiar with things like Flickr, which started in Vancouver, Canada, with government funding. And we'll talk a little bit more about that today. You may be familiar with the really cheesy entertainment content that we export, like Celine Dion and William Shatner and Loverboy. Loverboy was on my plane to Austin, by the way. I hear they might be performing later in the week, so I'm going to keep my eyes out for that. But you may not know that things like RIM started in Canada. All the business geek wannabes you see walking around with Blackberries, invented in Canada. You may know about some of our other most famous exports, other than weed and Bob and Doug McKenzie. We also have hockey. Yeah, but you may not be familiar with some of our other things, like our innovative entrepreneurial tech companies like StumbleUpon or Club Penguin, which just acquired a few months ago out of Kelowna for $750 million. In addition to those, we have a whole bunch of interesting Canadian innovators and entrepreneurs here this morning. So we'll jump right in, and I'll introduce the panelists. On the far right, we have Jennifer Iwano, founder of Elastic Entertainment, and give a little intro.
Hi, everyone. We were making bets on how many people would show up this morning after the rain and a night of partying, and I think we've exceeded our expectations.
I said 17, so that's pretty good.
I'm president of a digital media production and consulting company called Elastic Entertainment out of Vancouver. We specialize in experience storytelling and storytelling experiences, and what that means could be a number of different things. Part of what I do is deal with a number of different traditional media companies that are looking into the interactive space. Clients include some major broadcasters like CTV, Canwest Global, and CBC. But a lot of the other things that we do is develop projects and applications that deal with getting the digital out into the real world in terms of storytelling. So we're having a lot of fun with that. And my background as well includes co-creating and senior producing a pioneer in social media called Zed, which was on CBC television a few years ago.
Awesome, thanks. Just to her left, we have Ron Teal. He's the president and founder of XPan Interactive out of Calgary.
Thanks. Yeah, my name is Ron Teal from Calgary, actually home of the Calgary Stampede, which you might know a little bit about. Again, home of the mini donuts, so that's one of our claims of fame there. XPan is essentially an e-learning company. We do a lot of work actually here in Texas with municipalities, Houston Metro, transportation associations. Typically, we develop platforms for getting content and learning to people looking getting into the transportation workforce, so blended learning and technical training. I'm also president of Digital Alberta, the industry association in Alberta, which is just east of British Columbia, east of the Rockies. The ICT sector there, the information communication technology industry, is about a $9.5 billion industry representing about 6,300 companies in Alberta, so which is actually only about 4% of the national marketplace in our industry. So again, not a, you know, we're a smaller piece of the pie in Canada, but overall, Alberta's quite a bit of an economic powerhouse there.
All right. Just to the left, we have Fadi Atala. He's president and founder of Blue Sponge, an interactive company out of Montreal.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I co-founded Blue Sponge with a couple of friends in 2000 as a web-based video production company. So with the emergence of broadband, we realized that video was going to become an important part of the web. And so we started with video productions. We actually worked with Zed back in 2002. And then we produced a number of properties for online entertainment with predominantly a video component, namely Made in Montreal, that was best of show here a couple of years ago. And then for the past 2 years, we've kind of evolved into an interactive creative agency, bringing the expertise that we had developed throughout the years in content, in video, and in strategy to clients that were that are really investing the web, that have a lot of that are predominantly content-driven organizations, working with the Montreal Canadiens right now, the Canadian Centre for Architecture, and other companies really trying to deploy their content online to get attention and business. So that's what we're doing now.
And finally, we have Steve Bosca here. He's founder of Hot Hut Games, and he's currently running Guabs, which is a spin-off game that they're taking to market.
Right. So Guabs is actually a Cambrian house. I'll get to that in a second. But I'm originally from Windsor, Ontario. Anyone from Windsor? No one? Okay. Didn't think so. And I started off as a strategic planner and business planner and eventually got into video games, of course, the natural progression. They have nothing to do with each other. But it was a pretty severe 90-degree turn that I took about 8 years ago and started working for Disney Interactive, went on to work for Black Box at Electronic Arts, worked for Radical Entertainment, which is now a Vivendi company, worked on all kinds of like Disney titles, hit Simpsons Hit and Run, all of the CSI games that Radical did, and eventually left Radical to found, pardon me, and be the founding CEO and president of Hothead Games, which was the Canadian New Media Association's 2007 winner for the most promising new company. And one of the projects within Hothead was a partnership with another company called Cambrian House in Alberta. And Hothead now continues to operate, and I've moved on solely to work just on this game called Guabs, which hopefully I'll get a little chance later to give you a little plug for, because it's a really cool game, and I think you'd all probably want to play it.
Awesome. I'm Chris Krug. I am the token American up here. I live in Vancouver, and I have for the last 13 years. I run a company called Rain City Studios. I was the founder of a company called Bright that recently got acquired by Rain City, and we build online communities for all sorts of people, mostly in the States, Warner Brothers Records, Firefox, Sony BMG, and stuff like that. So how many of the people in the room here are Canadian? Okay, interesting. For those of you who aren't, you're probably like me, you didn't have a Canadian history course in high school, you probably don't know that much about Canada, so I just want to start off with a little brief overview of the geography and history of Canada. Canada lives to the north of the U.S. You'll start on the left, in orange, you'll see British Columbia, known for its resource-based economy. Probably used to be timber and fish, and now it means marijuana. Just to the east of that, you have Alberta. This is more or less the Texas of Canada, famous for conservative politics, cows, and oil fields. Moving farther east, we'll deal with these two together. We have Saskatchewan and Manitoba. Manitoba, interestingly enough, Winnipeg, Manitoba is the coldest metropolis in the whole world. More people, 500, it's the largest city over 500,000 people with a really, really, really cold climate. Just to the east a little further, we have Ontario. They believe they're the center of the world. Moving farther east, we have our revolutionary brothers in Quebec. We ask them what they want, but they won't talk to us. And then we have a whole bunch of cute little provinces over there to the east, some islands and different things, great places to go on vacation. And then we have the provinces up north, Yukon and Northwest. And they added a new one recently, Nunavut, which sounds like a failed .com startup. But yeah, that's Canada.
We actually got Canada right here, if you think about it. It's like a very small number of intelligent, attractive, talented people in a very large space.
But I'm unable to kind of give you the complete history, so I'll let some of my other American friends just give us a little overview here.
Parents, our children are out of control! This is what happens when toilet humor is allowed to run rampant!
That's right. Kenny set himself on fire because he saw Terrence and Philip do it in that dirty movie.
We must stop dirty language from getting to our children's ears. We must go fight the source of it.
But what is the source?
Oh, that's easy.
Times have changed. Our kids are getting worse. They won't obey their parents. They just want to fuss and curse.
Should we blame the government? Or blame society?
Or should we blame the images on TV?
No, blame that at all.
Shelf. But now when I see him, he tells me to fuck myself.
Well,
country anyway.
My son could have been a doctor or a lawyer, it's true. Say he burned up like a Peggy on a barbecue.
Should we make the matches? Should we make the fire?
Apologize for the awesome audio quality there. First thing I could find last night. So, Canada's the punchline of lots of jokes and funny things, but there is a lot of awesome, interesting stuff going on there, and that's what we're here to talk about this morning. One of my favorite stories is Flickr. I'm a big Flickr user, and Flickr started as a company called Ludicorp in Vancouver. They got some funding from Telefilm to work on a project that they called Game Never Ending. Game Never Ending was this online game of which photo sharing was one component that really stuck, and people really started using it, and they ended up spinning out Flickr from the Game Never Ending, and it ended up being acquired by Yahoo and potentially going to end up being acquired by Microsoft here if that deal goes through. So this leads us into some of the government funding programs and different things that are available that kind of help people get started and spur on innovation in Canada. Fatty, you want to jump in on that and talk to us a little bit about some of the things that are going on?
Yeah, well, you can basically you have to find a way to start a business, and that involves money usually on top of credit cards. So you can get, of course, funding for startup from regular foundations, or we got actually a pretty good grant to start, about 20K from a small foundation in Montreal. But then the more interesting are the growth and the innovation funds. Us being such a small population with a big, country, funding innovation is not as easy as putting a business plan together and pitching it to a venture cap. So we have found another way, which is government funding. So we can get funding, and that's pretty actually awesome in the sense that getting funding for content projects that wouldn't exist otherwise, and even in some cases, commercially speaking, they wouldn't exist because their commercial value is not set as yet. So the commitment of government to public culture, if I may, whether it, as a broadcaster or in terms of funding new media projects, has been pretty exciting because we managed to get off the ground projects that made us noticed by CBC. When we first working with Jennifer, we had some money from the provincial government just to R&D interactive video and hire people. So we did that, and then we produced a couple of other properties funded by the government, which we own the IP. So it's really like a funder that comes in, believes in the project, and then puts in some money either as a subsidy or a long-term loan reimbursable only if you generate revenue, which is never. So the film industry has been running on that model actually for many, many years, given that the film industry in Canada is generally speaking not a profitable industry, but we still have Canadian films that make it to the screen and to video stores. So they replicated the same model for new media, and they actually started investing in that. As entrepreneurs, you have to kind of commit to a minimum investment as well, or find other investors to match the funds, which sometimes is a bit of a trouble, but that's how you can get projects off the ground. Now, whether these are sustainable or not, it becomes your own.
Do you think this stuff's helping?
Yeah, actually, I was just about to jump in there. Because what I've always found interesting about the government programs, oftentimes, we're talking to people in the States, and, you guys are so lucky in Canada, you've got all these funds that you can access, tax credits and everything. And that's all fine, but that is at the cost of the high tax base, right? We pay a lot of taxes in Canada, and it goes somewhere. It's not like, you can complain about high taxes, but that money actually goes somewhere. And in Canada, what you have to do is fill out a form, and you can get a lot of it back. And you don't get that in the States. It's more of a, I guess, pure capitalist model where, we won't tax you as much, and you decide what you want to do with the money, including, buy your own healthcare. Do you really want that? All these kinds of support programs that we have, wage subsidies, whatever, in Canada, they just don't exist at quite the same level in the States. So is it a good thing? It's a bad thing? It's a different thing. And what it does in Canada is it does require you to endure a little bit of bureaucracy to basically ask the government for your money back. And with the GWOBS game, it's a great example. We got Telefilm funding for it, quite a bit of telefilm funding for it, we probably wouldn't have gotten that money from a private investment community because the game itself is quite different. Like, it's very innovative. It combines a few different things that have never really been together before. And you try to go to private investors, angel investors or VCs, they really kind of like to see something that's been done before. And when you're not doing that, they almost look at you like a university project. It's like something that somebody else should be funding, but not them. And really, that is the other dichotomy, I suppose. Like, in the U.S., you probably get more innovation coming out of colleges and universities and research labs. In Canada, there's a greater likelihood that the innovation will come from businesses who already have a market focus for a product that they're working on, because they can access these sort of experimental pools of money to develop products.
And at the same time, you know, Fadi mentioned that a lot of this funding, Telefilm is one source, Bell New Media Fund is another source, was based on film practice. So in a way, these funding bodies are also still trying to work things out because new media is growing, it's still new, and they based a lot of their parameters and policies on how to fund film. And there's been some issues with that along the way, but they are getting better at it. There is quite a bit of bureaucracy to go through, and this is one of the other issues that people in the industry have when they're trying to fill out a proposal for one of these funding bodies, is it can take quite a bit of time, and not the kind of time that works necessarily for the digital media industry. But at the same time, it does fund creative content. And, you know, as was mentioned, that's not something that angel investors or VCs are willing to do. For example, Telefilm has three different areas that they fund: development, production, and marketing. And the caps for that have grown. I think it's like close to 500,000 for different stages. The Bell New Media Fund funds exclusively for projects that have a broadcaster component, like a TV component. So they have been able to fund some really interesting projects where it's like a, you know, an online, not just an online companion, but sort of multi-platform types of projects. And through that, there's been huge success, like for one company in Toronto called Xenophile Media, that has done some excellent alternate reality games with broadcasters that they've netted 2 Emmy Awards just from these projects that were funded through Bell. So, good stuff.
And in the digital media space, too, there is an intent to commercialize technical products. And so one of the benefits of this whole program is that there's funding coming from different levels of government. There's provincial, there's federal, also down at the municipal level. But going right into the corporate or the private side, there tends to be a better success rate of commercializing those technical products or services. So again, you know, where typically the innovation is coming from education, by going right to that small or medium-sized enterprise and going right into a private corporation, there is a better, you know, hopefully, success rate for going to a profitable and commercial product and service.
And beyond startup and early stage financing, there's other types of programs available. At Rain City, we have a guy who a third of his time is dedicated towards applying for and documenting our Shred financing. Someone want to talk a little bit more about Shred and what it is? And
I can speak a little bit about that. Shred actually stands for, I think, scientific research and experimental development. And what it does, I mean, if you have an idea or you're working on a killer application and you're sort of innovating technology, or there's some sort of innovation or an evolution of some sort of something that perhaps has been built before, but you're taking it to another level, there is a federal program that will help in funding that and giving up to a certain amount of your money back, actually.
Essentially, any money that you spend internally on research and development, you get a portion of that back as cash from the government.
It's cash, yeah. It's non-refundable. So there's a direct grant for innovation to private corporations.
And that helps a lot when you, that helps us a lot take risks and invest in technology, whereas in a normal case we wouldn't have, because as agencies, you know, as client-driven agencies, you don't always necessarily, your mission is not necessarily to develop technology, but by doing so and by enhancing your technology platform and capabilities, they allow us in that sense to be more competitive, whether on the Canadian market or on international markets, because the volume of business is lower because of the size and the the limited types of, in Quebec, if you look at the market, it's only 7 million people. So if you're accessing the internal market, it's not such a big market. So it's very difficult to become profitable quickly. So the need to export is important, and to be able to export, you need to be competitive. So I guess that's why this program is there, and it's really, really helpful.
One of the things we talk a lot when we talk about the differences between doing business in Canada and the States is the currency and the exchange rate and stuff. In the 90s, it was a lot different. Film industry blew up in Vancouver because of the exchange rate and the dollar. Things have changed a little bit there. You guys have some stuff to say about that?
Well, in the last 18 months, exports, manufacturing has been hit. Interestingly enough, now that the Canadian dollar is at par with the U.S., it's still interesting that service exports are actually going up. We question why that is, and one of the, we can debate about that, but really it's because we do have the skills and the good workforce and the great products at the end of the day that are in demand globally. So that's, I think, one of the good things about it. On the bad side, for personal experience, there's margins that are diminishing because of that growing dollar. But if you're selling in Canadian funds, and more corporations in Canada, historically, that have been selling in U.S. funds are now switching to Canadian funds and selling in a global marketplace in Canadian funds, and again, benefiting from that as well.
What do you guys do?
We are now, the work that we do in the U.S. is still, of course, in U.S. funds.
Okay.
But now they're taking notice. Our clients here are taking notice of that, the rising costs and the parity there. So there is a bit of education and interest there of what's happening. Globally, we are in Canadian funds.
Jen, what are you guys billing?
Nothing for export, but depending on the project, we've got one project that deals with a feature film, and we're creating an alternate reality game campaign for them in order to market their film. Actually, that's interesting because in planning to do this campaign for the release of the film, we are actually looking first to get it out to U.S. distributors and the U.S. market over getting out into Canada first. And that's a whole other issue based on when it comes to creative content in Canada, unless you get legitimized by the Americans, Canadians won't necessarily take their own products that seriously.
I'm going to be a little bit out on a limb here, just talking about the exchange rate. It's a discussion that keeps coming up, and I keep getting just really kind of tired and frustrated of hearing about it because the exchange rate is just one of many factors that can contribute to the profitability of a company. And if you're relying on the exchange rate to be competitive globally, or if you're relying on government subsidies to be competitive globally, you actually don't have a business. Like, you shouldn't be in business. You're being artificially supported. And if the exchange rate snapped to par, and if you took away all of the government programs, yes, you would lose some businesses. You'd probably lose some businesses that shouldn't be in business. They're probably not really businesses to begin with. But what you'd end up with is a small handful of very competitive, internationally competitive companies.
Isn't that like an anti-Canadian attitude, though? Like,
totally. I fully admit that. But I don't like hearing us take that as an excuse. I don't accept it myself. Like, I've been in the games industry when the dollar was $1.50, and now it's a dollar. And you know what? There's actually more companies in Vancouver right now making video games than there were when the dollar was $1.50. So the reason that is because Vancouver has become extremely competitive, and it's a great place for this kind of production. Internationally competitive, and it has nothing to do with the exchange rate. It has nothing to do with the fact that I can fill out a shred application and get money back at the end of the year. Don't want to hear that excuse. I think we've got a lot of great companies, and some that are probably right on the cusp. But that's sort of the Canadian way. We kind of help out our friends in need and hope that they can get on their feet and be competitive down the road.
As a general business pitch, as soon as you start talking about money, you've lost the pitch, right? So if you're basing the quality and the of your pitch and of your offering to clients on money primarily, this is, becomes more boring of a sale. I think the service, and maybe that's what explains the rise in service exports, is because I don't think it's a primarily price-driven commerce. I think it's primarily quality and general appeal of the product. Of course, price is one of the elements, and of course, our margins have been hit. Between two, we billed a client. It took 2 months to pay. It was a small bill, but we lost $3,000. okay, I would have preferred not to lose the $3,000, but I don't think we're working at that type of margin. We're not like a product-driven or a natural resource-driven type of business where the quantity with the price differential makes a big difference.
That's a good point. Yeah, the value of the service is still there. And you know, our industry is a bit collaborative as well. There's, you know, the education system, the collaboration with other industries. Canada being such a small population, we're about one-tenth that of U.S., twice the size, we don't have a choice but to be collaborative with other industries globally. So we don't really look at borders as a hindrance for doing business. We look at those as opportunities. And that's sort of one of the reasons that we may not be as competitive, you know, internally, but on a global marketplace, I think we're there.
Well, and that's one of the things that we actually talked about when we got together, how many of the advantages that Canada has over the U.S. or over other international bodies are the result of things that we are forced to do. Like, we didn't really have a choice. Like, the whole broadband penetration thing, it's great to say, oh, hey, Canada was the, you know, highest broadband penetration early on in the days of the internet. People are just catching up to us now. Aren't we great? Yeah, but, you know, our population is spread out in a straight line. And the two things that Canada has always had to invest in are highways and
telecom,
yeah. Right? So we've had no choice but to put our money there. It made the most sense for us to do that. So the fact that, you know, the world is now catching up, that's great. And the same thing that Ron just said, we don't have a really huge market that we can sell our products into, but we have very simple means of getting it to a very big market, the U.S. Once you've done that, it's easy to go to other markets. It's easier to go to other markets, to Europe and potentially Asia. So by virtue of us being small but next to somebody big, we have automatically, instinctively, out of necessity, learned how to export our goods, something that many companies in the States have not needed to do. California, you can run a very successful company in California and never have to go out of state. So here we are in a situation that we've been forced into, being the world leaders in some pretty amazing things that are very relevant to a lot of other companies today.
It's kind of the traditional Canadian approach where, you know, we've traditionally been a resource-based economy. And, you know, we cut down our trees and drill for oil, but any of the manufacturing happens elsewhere. It seems to be the same thing for the digital media industry.
How so?
Well, just that, you know, we have a lot of great kickstart programs like Telefilm, Bell, the TELUS Innovation Fund, the tax credits. And we're able to innovate, you know, on what I do with content, digital media content. But in order to get it to the next level, such as, you know, with Flickr, with Stumble Upon, those types of success stories like Club Penguin, they've gone south. You know, they've been bought out. They've moved to the valley, this kind of thing.
You agree with that, Fatty? Like, do you think you got to move south or look south to really commercialize it and take it up a notch, or do you think you can do that from Canada?
No, move south physically? No, not necessarily. But move south in terms of having, you know, access to the market in the East. And we were talking about that, how trade between U.S. and Canada is vertical, is north-south. There's very little trade between East and West because of the distances and maybe the similar type of offering. So
Has Blue Sponge started to make that move, or have you?
Yes, we do have business in mostly New York, and mm-hmm. sometime smaller scale projects in Japan, where we had the opportunity to be exposed to some clients there. But primarily in Quebec, pretty much maybe 5 to 10% in the rest of Canada, and increasingly on the East Coast.
And just to Fatty's point too, I always found it peculiar that as a Canadian company in Vancouver, I'd always be far more willing and interested in partnering with a company in California than one in Calgary. And yet the distance is actually, it's like an hour and 15-minute flight to Calgary while it's 2 hours down to California. And, you know, when you're just looking at all of the international issues that arise, it really is just like, you know, you just look straight down, like who's down there? You're always looking down past the border to see who you can work with instead of like looking side to side. I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing. It's just the way it is. And, you know, certainly it's just something for us to be cognizant of, like, are there ways to sort of break down those perspectives looking east and west? Do you even really need to in this globalized environment where you can really just, you know, do commerce and partner with people really anywhere in the world?
I think one of the perspectives is that there is a migration, whether it's innovation or even talent or people or resources that are, you know, being perhaps innovated in or as a resource in Canada and then migrating south for success and commercialization. But I think more and more, you know, those boundaries are breaking down, and you know, the commercialization is actually happening within the Canadian borders. And again, I have to argue that I don't think the migration is happening. There's the brain drain. I think that there's actually people coming up, and I think you're a good case study there for the last 13 years in Vancouver. But
the weather is great.
Yeah,
relative to the rest of Canada, it's great. Yeah, Rain City runs and operates out of Vancouver. We recently opened a Shanghai office, but all of our clients are American. With a couple exceptions, we do some work with the BC government, but that's new, and also we have some new Chinese clients as well. But we're looking out to the world from Vancouver and not just staying home. You guys can run your businesses anywhere else. Do you think it'd be more successful if you ran them outside of Canada, or do you think Canada's the right place for it?
Personally, I'm in Calgary because of a lifestyle choice. It's a very entrepreneurial type of city, province. So it was, you know, I was very fortunate to be able to grow my business very quickly. First 5 years, all my business was in Alberta. Now 65% of it is in the U.S., right across the country. And it can be run from anywhere.
Yeah. Jen, do you think Canadians and Canadian companies are truly more innovative?
Truly more innovative? I don't know if you could say that they're truly more innovative. They certainly have the opportunities to become innovative with these funds that we've talked about and to focus, to basically experiment, right? It gives us the sort of room, the flexibility to experiment on something, and from there, things can grow, right? Not 2007, last year, I was a juror for the International Interactive Emmys, and I got to see the best of the best in the world when it came to digital content. I was pleasantly surprised that the stuff that I saw, you know, I thought, okay, there'd be some great stuff from the UK or Europe or Asia, but the best stuff was actually Canadian. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, Canadians swept the Interactive Emmys with two wins, one for Regenesis, which is a Xenophile project, and the Zimmer Twins, which was a really cool interactive kids project for a cartoon, as well as for, I believe it was digital platform for a mobile video company called Byte TV. And then BBC, I believe, got it for best broadcaster. But it was great. I mean, the work stood out. So, we can be.
I'm going to be even more bold and say we have to be. Like, as Canadians, we have to be more innovative because it's the same sort of thing, like, just in business. Like, as soon as you become a market leader, like Nike or Coca-Cola, companies change their personality. They become, they take a defensive strategy, right? They're at the top, so they focus on retention of human resources. They focus on non-risky business strategies. And it's the challengers that have to shake things up. The Pepsis and the Adidases have to bring in fresh new talent. They have to stimulate a lot of innovation to try to take a few pot shots at the leader. And Canada is the Adidas to the United States Nike. We have a very relaxed and open immigration policy. We're bringing in all kinds of people with many, many different ideas. We're trying to stimulate innovation so that we can make some really reasonable inroads into what is a very stable and mature marketplace.
In Vancouver, we have a really rich talent pool. I'm a teacher at Vancouver Film School, and I know that it's known. It's here. Vancouver Film School is also exhibiting here at South by Southwest and has a big presence. Of my 12 students that I had this year in my internet classes, 9 of them were not from Canada, and 3 of them were from Vancouver. So there I see a big the appeal of the Canadian institutions. We also have Emily Carr in Vancouver that pumps out a huge amount of great interactive grads. So between Vancouver Film School and Emily Carr, SFU and UBC, it feels like the percentage of kind of the population that graduates with a high interactive skill set is really high, and we go on to hire a lot of folks there, and it's a big reason why I advocate that people should consider opening companies in Vancouver. There's a lot of people who live there. They live there for the lifestyle, so the cost can be lower, but they graduate with, you know, world-class skills as seen by people coming from the States and from Korea and China to go to Vancouver Film School. Do you guys see that as well?
Yeah, I would even mention that there's, as far as training not just in sort of like, you know, hard technical skill set, but also just to train your mind in terms of what's possible with digital media and interactivity. We have some amazing institutions out there. We have the Canadian Film Center Media Lab, and I believe Anna's back there, who heads that up. And that's out of Toronto, and we also have the Banff New Media Institute. And both of these institutions have wonderful like workshops, boot camps, and longer-term types of training labs to get people together to, you know, create ideas, to plan innovation. And one of the projects that came out of the CFC is actually going to play here at South by Southwest. Late Fragment, which is North America's first interactive dramatic feature film. And that came out of their training program. And it's on Tuesday, March 11th at 2:30 at the Austin Suite. So if you want to see an example of innovative storytelling, I would highly encourage you guys to head down there. It's an interactive, full-length, feature-length film. So, yeah.
But on that, I would kind of... I don't know if we're in a cycle or it is kind of a chronic a problem, but there is definitely a shortage of resources, definitely a shortage of the proper type of education. The market is going much faster than the educational and the training infrastructure is. And I, even talking to some other people in New York and in the U.S., I think there's been the same problem is there. Even though, you know, some of the U.S. Schools, especially out of New York, are one of the most, you know, kind of experimental and innovative and trying new things, not only in web innovation, but in interactivity in general. Companies there are complaining because of the volume of the need. So the demand is very high. The supply is not so high, I would say. As much as it should be. And frankly, I think this is when I talk to some people about it, for me, it's the main constraint on growth. For me, the main risk is finding the right people and not finding the right business. There's enough business out there, especially these days, until the next recession maybe, but the main problem is finding the right creative director that has done a certain number of projects that is capable of pushing the boundary and going beyond. That's where it hurts the most.
It's certainly true. I think one of our greatest challenges is that skills shortage.
And where did they go? Did they go south? Are they not there to begin with?
To the game industry.
To the game. Well, for me in Calgary, they go elsewhere in Canada to Vancouver, Toronto. But I go across North America looking for help. But typically I'm finding it within Canada, Vancouver. Primarily is where we try to pull people.
I want to riff on a point that you guys touched on a second ago about the kind of Canadian insecurity issue. What is it about Canadian content, Canadian companies that kind of feel the need for American validation or world validation before considering it creative or successful?
I think even what I was saying before just about us being like, we're always challengers, right? Like we're never, except for hockey, we're not the world leaders really in anything. And we kind of like the... I think we've grown to like or become used to the challenge. For people that joined us late, there was a show of hands at the beginning. It's like most of the people here are Canadian in this room. So Canadians, they tend to come to hear what other Canadians have to say, and we kind of commiserate. And this session was blame Canada, right? It's like how Canada's leading. Well, the Canadians here probably know how Canada's leading, but we'd still like to hear each other talk about it because it just makes us feel better, right? If you saw a session that was called Blame America, I don't know if you get a lot of people, a lot of Americans going to it. Oh, I don't want to hear that. Like, I want to hear, you know, something else.
Hey, you know, David Crow from Microsoft Canada.
From Microsoft Canada, general troublemaker. And, you know, but we have this weird inferiority complex, but how many home runs do we have from the business side? Where are the rims? There's one. You know, we stand up here and we say we're innovative, and we use this horrible word, innovation. It's the stupidest word that I've heard anybody use down here. It's we're creating change in different industries. The problem is the innovation is an act, not an outcome. And, you know, we have this weird moment of, all of these challenges, and yet we have so few home runs. And look, we're all Canadian, and we're standing here, and we're celebrating our being Canadian. We look outside for validation because, as a market, we suck. We're horrible. You know, what is our opportunity for growth? Do you want to become Rogers or Bell or TELUS? You know, so the questions really are, is why do we continue to look elsewhere for validation? How do we continue to inspire Canadian entrepreneurs and designers to want to change the world? And when most of us are looking south of the border or the UK or China as your growth strategy, you know, so how is it that we're going to continue to inspire Canadians to change Canada, to be a world-class power?
But this is not something new, is it? To look outside of Canada, how can you... The market, by definition, is fragmented and is spread out, so it's not like we made it that way. And it's true, there's no market in Canada, really.
But we stand around and we celebrate the fact that it is fragmented, or we all... You know, the fact that this is a panel that is attended by, what are we, 90% Canadian?
It was earlier, yeah. Who knows?
We added to that, so, you know, Mike... And Krug's not really Canadian.
No, I'm not. Token American.
But there's 30 million people in Canada. That's not very many, right? Like, there's 1.6 billion in China. Like, it's really hard to feel like you've accomplished much if you're the best in Canada. And just the whole notion of innovation, I mean, I think proportionately, like, we have one-tenth the population of the U.S. So
are we one-tenth of the population here at South by Southwest?
Well, no, not in this in this industry. Canadians are very well represented. I totally concede that, but you know, just as a whole, like, Canada should have about 1/10 of the success stories that we should see in the States, and I think we're actually.
See, I guess the problem for me is that that's a gut feel. It's anecdotal evidence. We don't have data that supports that. And you know, as Canadians, we all want to stand up and feel good about it, and we want people to like us. But we don't want to go out and collect the data and push the market and push Canadians to be better, right? We've all made, a lot of us have made lifestyle choices.
But be better where?
And what data?
Well, so I'm...
Hey, come grab a mic. Come grab a mic so you're part of the permanent record.
I'm sorry.
I'll take issue because I'm an open source guy who has recently joined Microsoft, and the outright
David,
statement.
David, let him make his point first, and then you.
So my point is, we're on a panel of new media, interactive, and you're from Microsoft, and you might have a background. I don't know who you are. I'm sorry, but you're saying innovation doesn't matter, and I think in this industry. Innovation does matter because this is what we're talking about. We're not talking about, you know, there is no innovation in a Microsoft platform. It's commercially driven.
Let's be honest. Commercial innovation is what most of the rest of the world is talking about. And commercial innovation is what makes it viable so that we can do things like CFC, so that we could support great education. The reason that we continue to have such a positive lifestyle advantage, and you misquoted me. I am not saying that innovation doesn't matter. Innovation is the key. You're in one of two businesses. You're either in sales or you're in innovation. So you're either building something new or you're selling it. And it's very easy. And we're really, as a population, bad at selling it, not at building it. And so, I'll let the Microsoft thing go.
Did you say we're good at building, not selling? Is what you're saying?
We're building, not selling.
I totally agree with
it's
you.
True.
Yep, I agree with that.
100%.
We're bad at selling ourselves. Hence why we're in this room.
But we're in this room talking to Canadians.
Yeah, you like Canadians. Well, we all agree.
Who's not Canadian here? Oh, there's quite a few more people.
Wow. Thank you. I guess all the Canadians left.
All the Canadians said, wow, I've heard this before. Let's go home.
Exactly.
And what were the non-Canadians wanting to get out of going to a Canadian panel?
Yeah, we have about 10 minutes left. If we have some questions out there, if you want to direct some stuff at these guys, now would be a good opportunity to do so.
Well, can I give you a quick example of Canadian innovation and plug the game that I promised I would plug at the same time? The game that we're working on is called Guabs. It's a desktop fighter, which means that you, Peter, and what's your name?
Who, me?
Yeah,
I just got here.
I know.
Hi, I'm Alan.
Alan?
Yeah.
Okay, so Peter and Alan are sitting on two different computers, and Alan issues a challenge to Peter. He's sitting there working, but a pop-up comes that says, Alan wants to fight. Do you accept? And he clicks on yes, and his character jumps on the Windows desktop and starts running around, grabbing the icons that you can throw as weapons and jump around on platforms. You can smash the toolbar. You can fight with each other right on the Windows desktop. So it's a new combination. It's a completely brand new innovation. And what we've also done is combined it with a transaction model that hasn't really, really caught hold yet in North America, the item-based payment model. So the game will be free to play, completely free to play. But you can upgrade your characters through microtransaction payments, which is huge in Korea. Now, the reason I brought this up was because we can do this in Canada because Industry Canada paid for me to go to China and Korea on a trade mission to learn all about this payment model. And then we just combined it with a game. And you talk to people in California about these payment models, and it's like the sort of distant, this is like hazy, what does this have to do with packaged goods and, you know, playing games on the Xbox 360? And it was really through the support of some of the programs that we're talking about that allow us to have a more open perspective. I can get Koreans to come work for me in Vancouver because many of them live in Vancouver. And the in-migration, so there really is a climate there that permits that kind of innovation, if you are willing to look for it and to access it.
But there is a point, you know, the catch-22 about having these great funding bodies that have, hundreds of thousands of dollars to give to a creative project is, you know, I'm being devil's advocate to myself, you can be as experimental as you want to be, but because there's no real expectation of bringing in revenue, then sometimes it just keeps being an experiment. And a lot of companies can't take it up to that level of selling and exporting, at least from a digital media creative side of things. That being said, in BC, there's a stat, I think even, no, it would be all of BC, not just Vancouver, but it's $1.7 billion has been generated in revenue in digital media, not including EA, which is has the main headquarters in Burnaby. So there is stuff being made and being sold.
Alan.
Hi. As I said, I'm Alan. I'm from Montreal. You guys keep talking about the success stories that come out of the telephone grants and Bell NMF, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the audience needs to know that for each of those success stories, there's 10 that fail. Or there's sites that are funded for $300,000 that should have been built for $50,000. And there's a lot of wasted money there. And there's a lot of crap coming out of free money. So don't you think that maybe an American model where you really have to go out and work for your money and impress someone in advance, as opposed to just filling out some telefilm forms and getting $300,000 for whatever, some stupid idea that telefilm, who in my opinion is a little, obviously I'm anti-telefilm as you may have noticed.
Hey man, I completely agree with you. I mean, our company went out and did it the old-fashioned way, you know, found customers who pay us money, grow organically, bring on investment. Like, we've never taken a grant from anyone, and that's not our model as well. My American brain also can't always wrap my mind around all these projects that are constantly getting funding and grants and never see the light of day, never have a real customer, aren't even really that interesting beyond a small niche of people. I think it could be potentially a detriment to the whole environment as well.
And the rest of you?
I agree and don't agree in the sense that, yeah, I agree there's a lot of crap going out of publicly financed projects because ultimately it is somebody who's sitting down, studying your dossier and then deciding whether he should give you money or not, and then you spend it. And some people don't spend it for the right reasons. But I'd like just to go back to the .com in the States, which was funded by private money. Would you like me to start naming the crap that came out of there? I mean, it's just business. It's who's funding the innovation. If you are really business-driven and you think that you have a business plan, not a subsidy plan, a business plan that means you want to succeed and be a leader in what you do, then you get the money the way you can to finance your innovation. If you are just living from thing to another, well, I don't think that there's anybody on this panel that's part of this model, which is fine. But, yeah, there's crap. but there's crap everywhere.
Yeah, but there's a difference between funding crap from private money and some guy who decides he wants to invest
and makes
and
mistake.
He fails, yeah. Yeah. And there's a difference between funding crap with what's essentially my money,
and
does my tax money.
And does the persistent funding of crap actually affect the overall environment of people's attitudes and their perspective? We got someone else who wants
sorry,
to jump in
sorry,
on the mic.
You.
No, no problem. Great one.
Hi, guys. I'm Anna Serrano. Thanks a lot, Jennifer, for the plug. I will all before I answer that question, we're actually throwing a cocktail party for Canucks tonight.
Who's
at
we?
Egos, CFC Media Lab at 5 p.m. So all you guys and the Americans, too, are welcome.
You're
but
hosting
don't a... bring too many friends. Okay.
Keep your face pointed at the mic. What did you say?
Sorry.
You're hosting a party at what?
At Egos. Okay. I actually don't know the address. It's on Congress somewhere. So anyway, you can come see me after. I've got cards. But I agree with what David Crow was saying in terms of we're really bad at selling. And I also think that one of the things that you said, Scott, is part of the problem is we only have one type of funding model. So I think what's happening now is as much as there's innovation in the product development side, we need to start thinking about innovation within the programmatic funding model side of things. And I think that's starting to happen in places like Ontario, certainly at the CFC Media Lab. We're starting an incubation program where it's not about giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to people, but giving small amounts of money, $30,000, $20,000 seed financing, because we don't really have the private risk capital in Canada. So you need to have sort of public-private sector initiatives that pool money together and do that kind of very bootstrap approach to risk financing investment without also demanding the kinds of returns that traditional venture capitalists might demand. So I think there's some movement in that arena, and hopefully that's going to change. But I do agree that unless we start thinking about markets outside of Canada and start selling towards that first customer, we're going to fail. And that's what we've been trying to do at the CFC Media Lab. We produced over 75 different projects. Now, not all of them are great, but the ones that have moved forward to find clients, that's the first thing we do, is we say, who's your first customer? How are you going to get them, et cetera? So I don't know. I think there's some hope. I guess I might be too optimistic. What does everybody else think in the audience or in the panel?
And you bring up a good point. I mean,
I just want to mention that.
Would you introduce yourself real quick?
Oh, Phil Descend from Boston. Just want to mention that Canada has a lot of flash programmers and produces a lot of interactive media and actually has made great contributions to the flash platform specifically. So, and there's great products coming out from there. So I think there's a lot of optimism there.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, man. We got about 5 minutes. Come on, great. Step on up.
Hey, I'm Chad. Jennifer asked why Americans had come. So I'm a New Yorker who got tired of doing the New York thing, and California doesn't appeal to me at all. So I've been looking at where is there innovation pockets, either in the Midwest in the U.S. or other areas. So does you know, it sounds like there's a lot going on in Vancouver. Is Canada a place to either that Americans can go and either start, or you know, is it a viable option to go up there? To start working, it sounds like you've had some success. So that was what I was looking to personally get out of this. So
it's totally viable. Yeah, there's no issues there.
Hey, my name is Dorian.
Bring your friends.
And I'm from Toronto, and I've worked on a bunch of media projects that were Bell funded and Telefilm funded. I'm a little anti-Telefilm at the moment because they turned us down for our last project. but I'd like to bring up the reason why, because I thought this was kind of interesting. As all the Canadians here will know, the one of the prices that comes along with these funding is a need for it to be very Canadian content. Canadian content is really important to us so that we don't just suddenly, you know, get washed away in this flood of mostly American content.
Lose our identity.
I can kind of respect that, but in this particular case, and I won't, you know, plug the site here, but just to put it into context, it's a site where you come and you can make your own comics. And what they didn't like about it was the fact that the making of the comics, the content, the comics, were not going to be made by Canadians. They're going to be made by absolutely anyone who can come and use the site. So it's like they're not getting 2.0, I guess, in a sense. They don't realize that the tool itself is valuable and where the content comes from is really kind of secondary. If we'd pitched a site where we said, we'll make all the comics, they probably said, great, and written us the check. But, you know, we were honest and said, you know, the content's going to be coming in from everywhere. So, I mean, it's valuable in that it can, you know, kickstart some people who might not otherwise be able to find that support, but the bureaucracy and the turnaround time, I mean, there's just so many factors that are working against being new and exciting.
Can I just make sure that we address the previous gentleman? So I don't know if your question was actually answered other than just to say, yeah, come to Canada.
Yeah, but this you're totally right. This financing money doesn't necessarily come to non-Canadians, but it does come to Canadian-controlled corporations, obviously.
They
don't
want
to finance a corporation that's coming out of the state. But, I mean, just to go back to this, I was just afraid yesterday when we were briefing that the discussion would all go to telefilm and subsidies. I don't think this is really the point. The point is not to... Yeah, it could be debated in whether on the efficiency of such a model, etc. And of course, there's a lot of crap. Of course, there's a lot of inefficiencies. And yes, sometimes they consider that they have to... It's as much as a caricature as sometimes having a maple leaf to say that it's Canadian, you have to show it somewhere in your film. Like, yes... It's the downside, but again, it depends on your business. Are you setting up a business, or are you just setting up a way to make a living with whatever money you make? There's a fundamental difference there. If you're setting up a business and you want to sell world-class products, for me, it's one of the most comfortable but then challenging societies to be in. I think you can innovate a lot, you can create a lot. The lifestyle is, and I come from Montreal, so lifestyle is very important. So lifestyle is good enough. Is, I would say, even one of the best in North America, for you to kind of be able to do that. But then if you just want to start and selling locally, it doesn't go very far.
So we're about to get the hook here, and I think there's one more question at least. So.
Yeah. A question is just, I'm American, I'm from Colorado, and I just wanted to say that actually that kind of funding actually does happen here in the States, and my company started that way. So I was kind of amazed as you were talking about it that I didn't really kind of expect the panel to go this way either, but... We have, my company started on a program here in the States called SBIR grants, Small Innovative Research Grants, and we do health education websites. And there's other parts of, you know, there's Department of Defense and all these other people that get that kind of funding, but we do websites that, you know, teach health education that were funded that same way. And we, like, everything you guys have said have kind of followed our thing where we have diversified and, like, built our model, but that was kind of our seed to start the company. And so it does actually happen here in the States as well. So I just want to say that. And we have 33 employees, and so we've kind of grown out of that same thing anyway. So
thanks.
Good to know.
Any other questions or comments anyone wants to make? All right.
My name is Jay Goldman. I'm from Toronto, colleague of David's. And I just wanted to add that not all government funding in Canada is actually bad. The SHRED credits, I don't know how much you guys all know about them, but it's basically a program from the government where they will subsidize the employment of research or development team members within a team. And it's actually quite stringent to get the funding. You have to go through a whole tech review. But it is a program which has enabled a lot of large companies, and in fact, Microsoft being one of them, to set up development centers in Canada, like the one in Vancouver, because they can recoup so much of the expense. And it's not something which says you have to put a maple leaf in your film or something along those lines. It says make jobs in Canada which are development or research related, and we will pay for part of that. And that is a fantastic program. And I think it's, for a lot of the Americans here, you should actually look at whether it's viable for you to set up a development team in Canada, because it's like nearshoring, but you get, you know, part of your salary paid for by the Canadian government, which is fantastic. So, you know, not all the funding that we do is bad. I think there's a lot of opportunity there to help grow your business.
Thanks a lot, Jay and Dave and everyone else who had questions and comments. Thank the panelists. Get to know them. Talk to them afterwards.
Well, one closing point. If anybody wants to be one of the beta testers for the Guabs game, anybody that's here today, go to GWABS.com or flag me down, or you can see it looping at the booth. There's a video of it. And this is only for South by Southwest people. Just an open offer to you.
Thanks
guys.
For coming to
and
the panel,
don't forget
guys.
To check out Late Fragments tomorrow.